Welcome back to what I believe is episode 36 of A People's Guide to Publishing. I am your host, Joe Beal, the Autistic Publisher.
And I'm Ellie Blue. I am an editor who doesn't really focus on commas. And this week, we are going to be talking about the costs and consequences of publishing a novel by Jane Austen.
And our comedy routine.
So when people decide to publish a book, sometimes there is a very thoughtful deliberation that goes into that, and sometimes there is a sudden excited whim, and sometimes there's something in between or somewhere else on the map, and we're here to bring you down to the thoughtful deliberation end of the scale with our episode this week, because when you're publishing a book, there are costs associated with that. Big time sometimes, not just the financial costs, but also the cost of your time and the opportunity costs. And then there are also consequences, which can be both spectacularly good, abysmally terrible, and everywhere in between. Can you tell us a little bit about your take on the costs and consequences of publishing, Joe?
There was some speculation from yourself and Sydney on the previous episode that as we grow, we are attracting a more homogenized mass of submissions, which we have debunked and found not to be true. But what we are finding, what I am finding to be the case, and has been borne out in the data, scientific and otherwise, is that people come to us more and more sort of opportunistically. And there was always a bit of that, but that is becoming more of how we are changing at this point in our careers.
And when you say opportunistically, can you give us an example of what that sounds like?
In the olden days, we would get 95% of our submissions came because the author wanted to make a contribution to culture. Like, they wanted to impact the conversation on a subject, or they wanted to share skills on something that they were an expert in, or they had just deep, impassioned views on a subject and how other people had sort of a limited view of that subject. Whereas now, in 2019, we're getting more and more submissions that are like, you know, I thought it would be a great way to fund my world travel and my research by getting a book contract, or I would really, you know, love to get the, to write a book instead of having a job, or, And it doesn't, you know, it can work that way. Like, we certainly work with people in the numbers where they could take that career path instead of traditional employment. But you do not know until you are several years into your career as a writer if that is you, and you certainly cannot hinge your plans on that variable, because that is an extremely unlikely variable.
And would you say even that, like, coming to the project of writing a book with that primary motivation because you have a contribution to make to the culture is maybe more likely to get you to a more financially solid place with publishing?
Yes, what I think that you're trying to say is that if your motivation is to make money, that you will fail. Yes. I believe that is what
you're asking me. That is very concisely put.
I have been told that I have a gift for summary.
That was well summarized. So can you, like, let's just cut straight to the chase. How does a book make money? Or maybe do you want to start with the, like, most likely scenario? How does a book not make money?
My hero, Barbara Corcoran, on her podcast, most recent episode as of this recording, had a caller come in that was launching a business, and, you know, she was like, well, how much money have you invested into this business? And the caller was like, oh, like, only about $500,000. Like, should I invest more money than that? And Barbara was like, no, the entire problem is that you are not successful because you have too much money. Like, you just, it's not that you're spending too much money, it's that by having too much money, it's, like, severely clouding your thinking. She did not use those words. That is my, again, gift for summary.
And I just thought that was so amazing, because I feel like that is often why books fail, is just people throw money at it, and then when it doesn't succeed, they throw more money at it, and then when it still doesn't succeed, they're like, okay, well, how big does the check need to be, you know? And, you know, there are other, the other principal reason is that the book development is sort of inscrutable. You know, that you cannot figure out what the emotional payoff is to the reader by looking at the book. And in one telltale example of this, we don't always have our reference copies on hand. So when we published this book, Grow, by Eleanor Whitney, in 2013, this is not a book about gardening. This is a book about...
cannabis.
No? Not about cannabis either. This is a book about, actually, about being an entrepreneur. But about, like, taking your hobby, craft, entrepreneurship into a business, you know, rather than being a hobby. When we published this, this book did very well out of the gate, you know. And we sold more than 5,000 before publication, which, sadly, in the book publishing world is a very remarkable number. And, but we soon found the limitations of this development. You know, you do not, you cannot see the most important keywords on this, the way this cover is designed. And so we're actually going to give it a new title, Quit Your Day Job.
And a new cover.
And so we're going to rebind these. We found a, my dream, we found a bindery in Portland that can tear these covers off, glue a new one on, and then we can go pick them up. It's like magic. And so that's a great example of, like, this is a book where people were interested in it, and then over time, without the momentum of launch and the marketing behind it, it got lost what it was and why anybody would care. Whereas, and that is sort of the problem of conventional fiction and things like that, where they do not build the book for long tail evergreen sales. They build it for very short-winded, like a humph, you know, is sort of the sales arc, you know, and then you, like, hit peak, and you know it's never going to come back after that peak. And so those are sort of the two fundamental ways that books fail.
So what are the costs of publishing?
Well, it depends. Do you mean this literally, or do you mean this metaphorically, or?
I mean in terms of, like, the point of this episode.
So, principally you have three things, where you have the financial costs of design, editorial development, you know, printing, publication, you know, marketing, things like that, that should all be borne by the publisher, you know. And if those are not being borne by the publisher and they're asking you to pay for these things, then go find another publisher.
And
secondarily, behind that, you have the most of the time, if your publisher is a professional operation, you know, people are being paid hourly wages or salaries or some type of compensation for their time. So you would bundle that under costs. That's like the bottom line costs of the publisher. And but that is, it's sort of a double-edged way of looking at things, because it's not just the time that it costs in to that publisher in terms of, like, what they're paying in wages, but it's also, like, this is taking up a good amount of focus for that publisher, for the staff, for things that might have, like, a much greater, you know, long-term impact on them, you know. So that's why you wouldn't want to be a publisher that publishes all over the place, where you wouldn't want to do, like, a mystery, then a how-to photography book, you know, then science fiction, then, you know, sort of a gardening book, that, you know, because then you're basically reinventing the wheel with every single book you publish.
It increases your costs, and it also takes you away from doing what has worked in the past.
Exactly, and you're forever rebuilding, like, your network for every single book you publish.
So how much would you say, and we can really only speak for ourselves here, how much does it cost for us to publish a book, considering all of those factors?
So every book we publish costs us about $20,000, so it's probably a solid average.
And then what about the costs for the author?
And so for the author, you really should only be looking at your time, like how long it will take you
to do this, both to write the book and then to promote the book and to market the book and then to consider, but then realize that you should not be arguing with your publisher at every step of the process, because that is really a terrible use of everyone's time. And assuming that you trust your publisher and rely on your publisher, that you should know that they will make professional decisions that are in the best interest of the book, because that's what they do. And, you know, and you're right to some degree, because that is not always the case, and everybody makes mistakes, and for a lot of publishers the issue is that they are well over capacity, so they are not making clear, great decisions. However, those...
I feel like this is a little bit of a tangent.
No, it's an because important point, it's like but... you need to really be looking at, you know, a lot of times the author's time is they're like, I don't have any time, and then what that actually means is they're not very good at managing their time.
Mm-hmm.
So you have to go back and look at, like, what is actually important in the expenditure of your time, and then you have to be looking at, like, what you're compromising by spending your time on the things that you're spending your time on, i.e. opportunity cost, as you said.
So one of the things we talk about, or think about a lot here as economics brains, this idea of cost versus investment. And maybe that would be helpful to bring in a little bit of that analysis here. Like, we think of all these things that we put into books as costs, but they're really only costs if we're not getting a payoff from them later.
Yeah. So we have about 8,000 copies of this in our warehouse. And at the rate that we are selling this book, that is more than a 10-year supply. So you could look at this one of six ways. You could look at this like the cost to produce this book, which was, you know, that they was were about $1 a unit. So, you know, that's $8,000 of inventory plus the tax burden annually for having that inventory. Plus the opportunity cost of, like, that, that's a lot of space that could be used for 8,000 books that are, you know, selling, which is, like, really what a warehouse should be for. And, you know, so if you're not thinking critically or if you're too emotionally close, you would think of that as like an $8,000 cost that you sunk. And then you would try to like spend money marketing this book to make that inventory live inventory again. And I have been that publisher, and it is a very sad state of affairs. So the real opportunity is to say, as illogical as it is, to just put another cover and title on this book will give it new life, because you are turning a bad investment into a good investment, even though it does cost you more money. And so, you know, we have other books. Let me find a good example here. We published this book originally in 2007. I think it actually pubbed in 2008, maybe. Oh no, technically 2009 was the publication release year. I guess we signed it in 2007, printed it in 2008, and published it in 2009. And so this book, this was our first book to sell over 100,000 copies.
This book is Make Your Place by Raleigh Briggs.
Mm-hmm. You know, so you can look at this one of six ways. You can look at it as like we spent 20, 30 hours of work making Make Your Place into a popular book that sold very well. It got some really key reviews early on. It sold a lot of books. But when you think about it in terms of investment, what it actually is doing is over 10 years later, we're still selling hundreds or thousands of these every month. And for 10 years later, that's a huge deal. You know, that means we don't have to sink all of the hours and hours into making this book go that we do with Grow or, you know, many other, or any of our front list books that we are publishing, you know, this coming spring or winter. You know, those books are getting a lot of our time and attention right now because we have to make them good, and then we have to get them to in front of an audience, and then, you know, whereas with Make Your Place, it's already selling. So that was time well spent. That was money well invested, because now all we have to do is keep reprinting it every time we sell out, you know, and that's not hard. And then the author gets a check, you know, regularly. Nobody has to do anything. It's right. Wonderful.
And can I speculate a little here?
You may.
You can tell me if I'm right or wrong. So with Make Your Place, part of what makes it such a good investment is because the time was spent to make the cover really, really good.
Yes.
Like, this cover is what sells the book. Like, both Make Your Place and Grow are excellent books. I would say they're equally excellent. However, because the time was spent on making sure the cover was right on Make Your Place, and because Grow came out during a more hectic time when there was less time to spend, and it felt like spending a little extra time was just too costly, that, like, you know, however many hours of extra time that would have gone into making sure the cover and the title were correct, even though it's really inconvenient to completely revise those things, especially at the last minute, that wouldn't have been time spent, that would have been time invested that would still be paying off now if we had done it.
And to be fair, like, we went through maybe 6 different covers on Grow, and this was the highest rated and best of the bunch.
Should have done 7.
Or 9.
Or 12.
And so it's not that we were like, oh, there's a cover, great, let's go to print. It was more like what happened was we had interest from the Canadian university system, and they were like, okay, well, if you can get us books 3 months before publication date, we will, you know, we'll take thousands. And we were like, oh, that would be awesome. Yeah, that's a lot of sales. That will, like, more than pay for the print run. Okay, consider it done. And then, you know, the revision process was scrapped. And then when we sold out of the first printing, we were like, okay, well, we have to rush to reprint. We didn't even have time to fix typos and such. So, you know, again, these are things that best laid plans, you know. And it's also, yeah, to some degree, it's like the capacity issue I talked about, where, like, we made mistakes because we were severely over capacity at that time. You know, we were trying to do, that was a year where we tried to publish 27 books when, and we had a smaller staff then too. So even now, with our staff that is twice that size, we still really only do about 20 books well.
And that next year was the year I came on, I remember very well, because it was in part because of Grow that Joe was like, okay, this is the year we get ahead on our editorial schedule, and we essentially did twice the work of editorial and marketing that we would have in a normal season for a couple of seasons. It was a very busy year, but we got ahead, and as a result, even now we've gotten a little bit behind again, but we still have time to do that work that we need to make sure that the development is right and that the editorial is right. Mm-hmm. And that was, like, the best investment ever, even though at the time I was a little bit like, what are you thinking? This is too much.
Right. And that was the part. It's like, publishing feels like a forever game of catch-up when that is ultimately what leads to bad decision-making. And if you are ahead and you have appropriate emotional distance from your subject, then you can make good decisions.
So I would say, like, to summarize this whole episode, let me give that a try.
Mm-hmm.
The costs of publishing seem really high, but when you think of them as investments, and you think of them as, investments in good outcomes and good consequences, then you're going to have a lot better sense of what you should be spending your money and time on than you will if you just think of it as money and time that you'll never get back.
Mm-hmm.
Like, if you always think about, like, what you're going to get back from everything you do, you know what I mean? Like, for Grow, I would say, you know, we have a 2-color interior, and it was, like, you know, probably spent dozens, maybe hundreds of hours designing it. That was probably an investment we'll never get back. That was a cost.
Mm-hmm.
But if we had spent even a fraction of that time on the cover, then we would still be reaping the benefits of that investment.
Right. And to be fair, like, Grow did earn out. Like, we made all of our money back and then some, and, you know, the author gets regular, you know.
It's helped a lot of people.
Yeah, and that's true too. But again, the purpose of working with the publisher is that they can have a greater emotional distance from the author's work. And so by being a publisher, you have to really do that. You really have to say, like, what are the best choices for this book? And the author has to give up a good amount of control on things that are really not in the best interest of the book. And I think for a lot of authors, that's really hard for them. And that has been the thing we've been bumping into a lot this year, is that authors want us because we're small. And I think when I had less perspective, I thought they wanted us because they thought they could boss us around. But now I see it more like authors want us because they think it's not that we've made great decisions in the past. They can't really see that. They see the books that come out. They don't see the state that the books come to us in.
So they don't have the full picture, you know, whereas they probably perceive to a large part that the author brings us that cover, that editorial setup, you know, pretty well formed, which is almost never the case, like we talked about in a previous episode. So, you know, to some degree, it's like, it's the ultimate artistic collaboration, you know, the publisher has the appropriate distance to make reasoned choices, and the author has expertise and vision and an idea, and the, like, competency and willingness to execute on that idea to make it work on the shelf, you know? It's not just, like, by rigidly sticking to an ideal, a book will almost always fail, you know? So that's another cost and consequence. And I made a graph in the People's Guide to Publishing book. Essentially, your likelihood of success by being an author that works with a publisher is more than 1,000 times more probable, literally, you know, by the math, you know. So that is essentially what you're doing by giving up control. If control is the most important thing to an author, then they're probably best off self-publishing and, like, living in the world of 50 copies a year sold, you know, and that is okay. Like, if that's what's important, so be it, you know. But if bigger sales and an income are much more important, then, you know, you're best working with professionals. And, you know, the other thing that I did talk about extensively in the book is if you are an author who hires the professionals and maintains final say over them, then you're not actually letting them do their job, you know. And there's a great story about an editor of The Onion that hires a professional team to publish his book, and then basically, when they tell him how to do it, he says no. You know, and then it's like the book can't be successful.
This has been A People's Guide to Publishing, the podcast.
Episode 36. I am your host, Joe Beal, the autistic publisher and the author of A People's Guide to Publishing.
I'm Ellie Blue, editorial and marketing director here at Microcosm.
And we'll see you next week when we talk about something else.
Visit us at microcosmpublishing.com.
Thanks so much for joining us once again on People's Guide to Publishing, the podcast, episode 36. I am your host, Joe Beal, the autistic publisher.
I'm Ellie Blue, the editor who doesn't pay attention to commas.
And please send us your questions so we can answer them on future episodes. And please, please do give us those reviews on iTunes and everywhere else that podcasts are reviewed. 5 stars, if you please. And have a wonderful week.
Thank you. You can find us on the internet at microcosmpublishing.com or microcosm.pub if you want to keep it short and simple. You can also find us on Twitter at microcosm, on Facebook at microcosmpublishing, on Instagram at microcosm_pub, and here in Portland on North Williams Avenue.
Thank you so much.